A Place to Be. This is How You Lose the Time War Story, written by Ladybug21 and read by
Jonna
and Wilfriede0815.
If Red could have her way, Blue would never leave her sight for longer than a moment, never let her absence be felt past the instant when the earthy, rich, slightly rain-fresh smell of her skin has dispersed beyond detection in the air. But they both know that, to preserve the fragile joy they've wrought for themselves, they must carefully and cleverly continue to wind the strands of time in new directions. Their pursuers must be thrown off the scent, diverted mid-course on a stream, brushed away from any path that will lead to the tiny island of peace that their renegades have claimed for themselves. And if a task requires embedding, then Blue must go it alone. Blue knows what it means to align herself with the slow, steady flow of water that will carve canyons in good time. Red, by contrast, knows only the lightning strike, the dazzling crack that sparks fire instantaneously and ostentatiously. But at least now, if Blue must embed herself, Red knows when and where and why. No owls and geese needed as couriers. At least now, when she says her temporary farewells, it's not the tart tang of sumac she presses greedily to her mouth, but instead Blue's honeycomb sweet lips. Red's fingers twine through Blue's hair, and she revels in the fact that by now, her hands would recognize anywhere its featherweight, its buoyant softness, its full body. She breathes in Blue, already impatient for her to be gone and back again, and it takes her a moment to realize that Blue is kissing a message against her mouth. Red's brain protests having to analyze at a moment like this, but she plays Blue's game, commits to memory a strand number and a set of coordinates, and a date and a time of day, each morsel of information flashing in the pressure between their lips before giving way to pure pleasure. And once the message is done, Red allows her mind to go completely empty, other than the electrifying, tactile blueness that floods it. When Red has had enough of prowling about their private paradise, bored and lonely, they haven't quite gotten around to procuring a dog yet, she pushes aside a cold cup of rosehip tea and slips several strands over to the one recommended by Blue's kisses, a sleepy strand whose consequences have been safely minimal for some time now. The coordinates take her to just inside a cozy library on a university campus in a small town, an octagonal walled library with wrought iron balconies and spiraling staircases, whose tidy shelves are crammed with books bound in lusciously jewel-toned leather. Stained glass windows allow the late autumnal afternoon light to filter in from outside in flickers of vibrant color. Sconces on the chestnut-paneled walls cast a warm glow into even the most neglected corners. Red drinks in the sight delightedly, imagining the wonder that must have filled Blue's face the first time she set her scholarly eyes on this treasure trove. She begins to step forward, then reconsiders. Blue was very specific in her coordinates, after all, and she's here a few seconds early. Sure enough, out across campus, a bell in some unseen tower tolls the hour, leaden circles dissolving in the air. The sun shifts imperceptibly, and with it, an edge of ruby-stained light from a window slinks its way across the sapphire cover of a tome. Red spies it. Of course she does. And suddenly there's a one shimmering on the spine of the book in gold, other orient numbers sparkling across the covers of so many other books across the library. Red skims the stacks with a glance, memorizes the position of each book, blinks, and finds the numbers gone. After a moment, she casually crosses the room to the shelf, peruses the irrelevant offerings for a moment, then kneels and carefully pulls out the first book Blue has marked for her. Inside the front cover is a pressed flower, a purple-blue pansy. Pensée, that's for thoughts. Oh, love in idleness. Its petals are tissue-thin and delicate, sapped of fluid, but it peers at her with its little puckered black and yellow face. Red nearly laughs at its impudence, then actually chuckles at the letter playing in its ultraviolet spectrum, where bees would stray to suck sweet nectar. She crosses over to a squishy suede armchair under a sconce and sinks into it. Just for old time's sake, when she's certain no one's watching, she plucks the pansy from between the pages of the book and pops it in her mouth, the seeker once more nourished by the blue that is absent. And then she settles down to read.
My brightest alizarin, what's black and white and red all over? I'm sure there are countless answers to that question, some decidedly more gruesome than others, no doubt, but for my part, I hope it is the time you are able to spend in the company of these books while I am gone. Isn't it curious to think that, long before anyone knew how to dance along the braid, humans somehow had managed to capture all ideas and times and places in one location, as easily accessible as the strands that you and I play? Amassed in this little octagon is more power, perhaps, than an agency and a garden combined could ever hope to wield. Prospero may have been onto something, and a library is so much easier to maintain than a dukedom, anyway. You may ask, why this library? I must admit to fulfilling a long-cherished fantasy. You did ask for book recommendations, and yet you never did write me from a library. I had thought to gift you the great library of Alexandria before the fire, my Dashret, but you've undoubtedly been there, and I wanted you to be able to avail yourself of later written works as well, somewhere less crowded and noticed. If you like this gem, I can recommend others like it, with different assortments of knowledge from different times and tongues. I thought of granting you these stories in more tastes of spices, but there is something about reading black ink of a white page, isn't there? In wisdom conveyed through necessary dichotomy. I like how tangible it is, how aesthetic. Sometimes it's fun to luxuriate in stubbornly solid and inefficient media, especially when they allow you to ponder how old the writings are and how strikingly new their ideas. Please do browse beyond my suggested readings, needless to say, and don't feel you must finish everything or anything I suggest. I won't spoil your discoveries by providing a key linking books to numbers, but I am excited to see what most draws you. Perhaps a slightly different London than London Next, in which beings live alone and apart, but can be drawn together, instantly linked for moments at a time, by the shared experience of hearing Big Ben toll. If Wolfe is too big and bad for your tastes, perhaps a poetic cousin of the same era, evening spread out against the sky, or yet another from across the sea, dreams spread under your feet. And more modern options that might speak more directly to our plight. Try Codename Verity by Elizabeth Wien for the breathtaking story of two courageous women writing for each other, even if not to each other, across the devastation of war. Or, given the existentialism and angst of so many of these previous suggestions, there's a delightful joint effort by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett waiting for you to find it, and I'm quite curious to know who you'll relate to most. Once I might have said war. Now I'd probably say Crowley. But I'll let you choose for yourself. More than anything else, my life's blood, I hope that some of the words in this library inspire you. Inspire, in the Latinate sense of breathing in, of intoxicating yourself with new thoughts and stories, passing these stories straight through your heart, oxygenated ideas shifting from blue to red. If I cannot be with you in the flesh, let me infiltrate the most intimate parts of you with shared dreams, insubstantial pageants faded that leave not a track behind, and yet bring you closer to me than even the fiercest of embraces could. Enough of this. Go drown yourself in books, my precious coral. You are, and soon will be, in my thoughts. always. I'll expect to kiss your reviews from you when I return. Love, Blue. P.S. I should have warned you, there is one book you should not open. As the prophets say, you'll know it when you see it. Even we who wander the strands of time would do best not to invite paradox, snags and snarls resulting from too much knowledge of ourselves. I'd prefer to let this book gather dust on its shelf. I'm much more interested in the story we're writing together, day by day, however uncertain and perilous. PPS. And yes, we're still going to win. The end.